It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Governor Tony Evers and state Republicans reached a deal on a shared revenue bill for local governments. We'll learn more about how that money can be spent and how it'll impact communities across the state. First, it can be hard to say goodbye, and sometimes a song can help.
So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye. The sun has gone to bed and so must I. Adios, adios, adios.
Thank you, fellas. That was perfect.
That was the character Danny Rojas leading the singing in a recent finale of the Apple TV show Ted Lasso, with the title character responding. Lasso, along with the popular HBO show Succession, marks some of the latest finales to join the pantheon of major TV endings. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did a show you loved end this year? What did you think of that last episode? Do you have a favorite final episode of all time? What did you love about it? Do you have a least favorite one? What led you down or frustrated you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brian Carr is a professor of communication, information science, and women and gender studies at UW Green Bay. Brian, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thank you very much. It's great to be back.
What is the formula, as you watch it, Brian, for a successful conclusion to a long-running TV series?
So there are different schools of thought on this. One is that you want to make sure that you tie up your loose ends narratively, that the themes of the show come through in a very meaningful way, even if that doesn't necessarily give some of the most ardent fans of the show what they're looking for. Or you give the fans exactly what they're looking for, and you make them very, very happy at the end of the season. I think that if you talk about those two shows, Succession did the former, Ted Lasso did the latter, and they both did them, I think, quite well in those frameworks.
We got to say, we're talking about a privileged few TV shows, ones that run their course, that give the creators enough time to lead up to that finale. The vast majority of TV shows end, you know, maybe after one episode or one season. They don't know the end is coming. That said, that puts a lot of weight on those shows that do have the opportunity. How have you seen it go wrong for shows that make it to that point?
Let's just start with a little show called Game of Thrones, a show that outlived did not necessarily have enough of the actual source material to adapt. So they had to basically go off of notes from the original creator and decided to rush the last season because the showrunners were basically and understandably tired of doing the show. And they decided to just go ahead and do something that thematically made a lot of sense. If you go back and watch that show, like the ending of that show where those characters end up, it completely logical follows where things were headed, but was done so abruptly and rushed so much that fans ended up being very alienated and angry by how that turned out. And then they showed up for House of the Dragon anyway, so what do I know?
Now, we've mentioned Succession, another high-profile show that just came to an end. Here is a clip. The siblings, Shiv, Kendall, and Roman, doing what they do, I guess. They talk and argue over who should succeed to take over the company.
It's 6-6, okay. And we don't have Shiv's vote.
This doesn't make, like, logic. Where's the logic?
No, I just don't think you'd be good at it.
I feel like if I don't get to do this, I feel like that's it. Like, I might die.
Shiv, can we go in that room? Can you just vote?
Please. Please.
Shiv, you can't be CEO. You can't, because you killed someone.
Which?
What?
Wait, what do you mean? Which? What, like you've killed so many people, you forgot which one?
That's not an issue.
And as you said, Brian, some shows end by continuing what they've been doing all along. I haven't watched Succession much, but that fits the formula?
100%. That show very much... The show... I think one of the problems about Succession is I think people got caught up in what they thought it was versus what it actually was. What they thought it was, oh, here's characters that we root for, characters we want to see succeed or fail. What it actually was, this is a satire and a scathing indictment of not only the American media system, but really of America itself. And to have essentially the crux of the show boil down to squabbling siblings in a boardroom was really the only way it could have ended. It's the only real true ending they could have had.
We were talking about great and not so great TV finales. Those last episodes, whether they get it right or wrong. Brian Carr is with us from UW Green Bay, and you could share your favorites or least favorites at 800-642-1234. Shows new or old, 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Chris is with us in Delavan. Chris, hi.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to bring up what I think is possibly the most infamous last episode of all time, and that being the last episode of Lost. And I was totally enthralled with the show all the way through, up until I regularly tell people to, you know, you can watch the last episode, but I recommend just don't watch the last 15 minutes of the last episode, because it just makes you feel like you wasted all of your time before that point. And that's it for me.
Chris, thanks a lot. Now, that is one, Brian, that gives a lot of strong feelings there, the last episode of Lost. The creators have explained it. It's not, you know, they have this explanation of what inspired them and what actually was happening. But I guess if you have to read stuff by the creator to understand it and then like it, maybe it's not such a successful conclusion.
There's certainly an argument to be made there. And this is where I'm going to kind of disclose the only episode I ever watched of Lost was the finale.
What?
So I was completely lost. Yes.
Yeah, you would have been really lost, I feel like.
Yeah, it feels appropriate though, right? but I was fascinated by it all the same, because I had, you know, picked up a lot of it through cultural osmosis, right? Like, I'm like, okay, so they're on an island. The island may or may not be purgatory, whatever. There is definitely something to be said for a show that delivers its finale in such a way where if you were expecting a certain outcome or expecting a certain amount of catharsis or an ending, and the show either refuses to deliver that or doesn't deliver that, the caller's absolutely right. Like, you can feel like you wasted your time. And that's one possible way to react to one of your favorite shows ending.
Thanks for that call, sure. At 800-642-1234. Now, Brian, he could have ended that sentence with Lost when it comes to infamous final episodes. He could have ended it with Seinfeld. Now here's a clip from the finale. The show is mostly in a courtroom where witnesses from throughout the show have a massive clip show looking back at all the bad things the characters did. Here's a moment.
I banned that one, the woman, for a year. Then one day she came back.
5 cups chopped porcini mushrooms, 1/2 cup of olive oil, 3 pounds celery.
This is my recipe for wild mushroom.
You're through, soup Nazi. Back it up. No more soup for you. Next!
Published my recipes. I had to close the store and move to Argentina. She ruined my business.
This soup's not all that good anyway.
What did you say?
This is one that I think frustrated a lot of the hardcore fans of the show, Brian.
It was, and I understand that, but having recently rewatched that show, again, it feels like the only appropriate ending. This is a show where the characters sort of very notably are constantly making other people's lives worse, and even in some cases destroying their well-being. So there is something sort of cathartic on some level, maybe not for the audience, but maybe for the show's sort of internal logic, that eventually they're going to have to, the past will catch up with them. I will say that ending your series with the characters in a cell, awaiting, you know, serving out an indeterminate amount of time on a prison sentence is very, very interesting. And there were also a lot of other fake outs, including they made it look like the plane was going to crash that they were on for a moment. It's also interesting that they actually had an entire season about that episode in Larry David's later show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, that addressed some of these. So if you haven't checked that out, it's worth watching.
Let's go back to our callers now. Erica is with us in Lake Tomahawk. Erica, hello.
Well, good afternoon. I think one of the sweetest endings ever was Big Bang, and one of the worst was Cheers. I don't know if they were drunk or what the deal was.
Was that the one where they had like John McLaughlin, the sort of serious public affairs guy, interviewing, like having a panel discussion with the characters?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think they were lit. I don't know.
I mean, you know, it's the TV business. That's certainly possible. Thanks a lot for that call. Pro Big Bang. And the Cheers is one that's gotten talked about a lot over the years. Not a fan there, Brian.
No, but it is one of the highest rated finales of all time. And what's interesting, if you go back and you look at shows like MASH and Cheers and that sort of thing, and even Seinfeld, these were shows that were massive cultural events. They were rapidly approaching the Super Bowl in terms of actual viewership. And that just doesn't happen anymore. We talk about the finales for Ted Lasso and Succession. Succession got, I think, about 2.2 million viewers, which is nothing compared to 80.4 for Cheers or 105 for MASH, which is pretty emblematic of how much just the business of television has changed.
Thanks a lot for that call. Brian Carr is with us from UW Green Bay, and we're looking at TV show finales, a couple big ones, but by modern standards anyway, just passed us by, talking about what makes them great or terrible, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. If there is a series you have loved and it made it to a finale, did it do what you wanted it to do? Did it wrap up the show in a satisfying way for you, or did it disappoint you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation. Take more of your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about TV finales with Brian Carr, professor of communication, information science, and women and gender studies at UW Green Bay. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What last episode of what show do you want to bring up, for better or worse? Call it at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls. Susie is with us in New Berlin. Hi, Susie.
Hi. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember this show, but the Bob Newhart show, when he and his wife were running an inn in, I don't know, someplace in the northeast corner. The last show, if you were a Bob Newhart fan, as I was, I mean, there are a lot of people that just followed him no matter what he was doing, because he's just got such dry humor. Anyway, the end of the last show, I don't even remember what they did at the inn. Called it quits, closed the doors, I don't know. And then all of a sudden it switched to the show before that. They were in bed in their apartment in Chicago, which was the series before the other one started. And the wife woke up and she said, I just had the weirdest dream. We had an inn in the Northeast, you know.
Sure.
So anyway, they tied the two together. I thought that was kind of cute, and I felt good about it. It felt very done.
Susie, thanks a lot for the call. And that's one I think people bring up a lot, Brian. Yeah, the Newhart show ended as a dream in the previous Bob Newhart show. I don't know, funny joke, or is it, it was all a dream? Did that, it didn't disappoint our caller, but maybe other people weren't wild about it.
It's one of those things where if it feels right for the tone of the show, It's probably fine. But yeah, the it's all a dream cop-out is usually just that.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Terry is with us now in Milwaukee. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, hi. This is a copycat of Susie's. Saint Elsewhere. I don't know if your guest Brian's old enough to remember that. It was a hospital setting with Hollywood's depiction of how they thought people working in a hospital, a busy hospital, operate. And sadly, it ended with the child having a dream.
Right. It pans back, I think, Brian, it's been a while, and then you see that the hospital is inside like a snow globe, and it's a kid holding the snow globe, and it was all an illusion or a dream or something like that. Where is that on your list?
So I have not watched Saint Elsewhere. I'll be completely transparent about that. But the snow globe ending is infamous, and certainly one of those ones that has been referenced, parodied, etc. And again, when you set up the finale as saying everything that you just watched ultimately was just false, it wasn't real, you are adding a level of artifice to something that's already inherently artificial, and it really does not. I personally think that's usually not a great way to end it, but again, we remember it, so maybe they did something right.
Thanks for the call, Terry. Mercedes joins us next in Green Bay. Mercedes, hi. What shows do you have for us?
Hi. So I just recently watched Breaking Bad, and Better Call Saul in that order. I know Breaking Bad's finale has been hailed by a lot of people, but I honestly really didn't like it because I don't think Walt got what he deserved, honestly. But I think that its sequel series, Better Call Saul, was amazing in how it carried out its finale, especially in tying up the characters' loose ends and their stories.
Mercedes, thanks a lot for sharing that. And I think it was a good non-spoiler way to talk about the end of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, and I'll try to also avoid spoilers as much as I can.
I mean, it's been out for a while. But
it has, but people are still discovering it, so I'll cut them a break. But yeah, it is something sort of anticlimactic. It really comes down to, do you see Walter White as a hero or a villain? And the show is very clear you should see him as a villain. The fandom is not always as clear. And so if you see him as a hero, it's almost sort of like this sort of poetic ending. If you don't see him as that, like Mercedes said, it is not satisfying because you're like, wait a minute, this is just, he got off too light, right? Better Call Saul in a lot of ways from, and I kind of gave up on that, but I did keep up with the show. I read about it. I followed the ending. Feels like in a lot of ways they were trying to kind of maybe sort of reorient the kind of moral compass of those two shows with that ending.
Mercedes, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Brian Carr from UW Green Bay about great and less great TV series finales after a couple of big ones dropped over the last few weeks. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Lynn is with us in Eustisford. Lynn, hi.
Hi. I think the best ending of any program that I can think of, besides the one from Bob Newhart, that was cool, but it's MASH. The way they ended that with going up and then seeing all the people down below, that was pretty good ending.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. We've got to listen here to a clip. Here's Hawkeye, the Alan Alda, saying goodbye to his partner in medicine and crime, B.J. Honeycutt.
Look, I know how tough it is for you to say goodbye, so I'll say it. Maybe you're right. Maybe we will see each other again, but just in case we don't. I want you to know how much you meant to me. I'll never be able to shake you. Whenever I see a big pair of feet or a cheesy mustache, I'll think of you. Whenever I smell month-old socks, I'll think of you. And the next time somebody nails my shoe to the floor, or when somebody gives me a martini that tastes like lighter fluid, I miss you. I'll miss you. A lot. I can't imagine what this place would have been like if I hadn't found you here.
Lynn brings up, as you mentioned earlier, Brian, a much-watched series finale, and it's one that, as we heard in that clip there, gives a lot of the closure people might have wanted to the relationships they'd been following for years.
Yeah, MASH was a special case in a lot of ways. That show tonally was something unlike anything else on television at that point. Very much a show that kind of, in a lot of ways, I believe actually lasted longer than the actual conflict in which it took place. And was, of course, it was never about the Korean War. Anybody who watched the show knows what it was actually about, which is, of course, Vietnam. Of course, it also outlasted that. That's the show that a lot of people, like, it's very feasible that, you know, you watch it as a child, you grew up with it into as an adult. And so it does, I think, resonate and stick with people in a very meaningful way because those characters really became such a huge part of people's lives.
Thanks a lot for that call. Brian, do you think a series finale is different in the age of MASH, you know, when it was mainly meant for that initial broadcast and, yeah, some syndication later versus a streaming show that, counts on people in some ways watching it maybe in real time, but maybe discovering it 5 years later?
Sure, and we can get into the metrics of streaming television. That's a whole other interview and make it make sense, but the takeaway, I think, is that there is a sort of disposability in the streaming age, right? There are shows that will stick around, that will last, that will resonate, that will mean something to people, but they don't feel like events in the same way because it really comes down to the whole idea that we're not sharing sort of a commonality in terms of when we're actually watching it, where we're actually watching it. If you were watching the MASH finale, you and 105 million other people were all tuned into CBS that night. Whereas if you're watching, say, the finale of Ted Lasso or Succession or something like that, you might watch at the same time. Like, you know, we would sit and, like, when we watched it, we made sure we watched it, like, as soon as 8 o'clock rolled around, we switched over to I keep saying HBO Max. It's Max now. I do so under protest. I refuse to acknowledge that name. But we made sure the app was loaded so we could watch it as soon as it was up, right? But that's still not the same, right? And so appointment viewing is gone. That sort of shared community event is gone. In an age of fragmentation, it's really hard to have that same sort of impact and oomph. And I think probably the last show to really do it was Game of Thrones. And that's, I think, a part of why it was such sort of vicious backlash, because some people were gathered around watching it to see how it ended. So it's definitely a different time.
And is it different, Brian, because, you know, the creators of MASH say knew what their ratings were. They might have focus group things. I don't know. But a creator of a TV show today has instant feedback, for better or worse, immediately from the fan community, if any.
Well, instant feedback from the fans, for sure. There's jokes in the Ted Lasso subreddit, for instance. People were asking, like, did the writers just follow us and just write what we wanted to see? And I think there's an argument that, yeah, they probably did. But also, you know, in terms of like the actual metrics of how ratings are doing for shows and that kind of thing, those numbers are very much under lock and key at most of the major streaming outlets. It's very difficult for showrunners to know exactly how a show is doing until they get the call, hey, you've been picked up for another season, or hey, you just got canceled. Right. So it's really hard, I think, in a lot of ways to build out those seasons in a way that, you know, with linear television, it was a lot easier, because if you got renewed for a season, you knew you got X number of episodes. You could either and you might get picked up again if the ratings were solid. The folks who did MASH, they knew they're going to be going on for a while until eventually they decide, OK, the show's going to end, or our ratings are down. So we're going to, you know, we have one less season to tell the story. So we're going to do it. That doesn't really happen. That's a luxury in the streaming age.
Brian, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Brian Carr, professor of communication, information science, and women and gender studies at UW Green Bay. We talked to them today about what makes a great or not so great TV finale. And you could keep sharing your favorites, your hits, your misses for final episodes over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up, find out how a new agreement on Wisconsin's shared revenue system could affect communities around the state and what kind of strings may be attached to local funding. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a bipartisan pair of lawmakers discussed their new bill that would give victims of clergy abuse more time to file civil lawsuits. Now, Governor Tony Evers and Republican state lawmakers announced a deal last week on a local government funding bill that would revamp the shared revenue system in Wisconsin. The agreement comes after negotiations over how much state aid should increase for communities and what restrictions and concessions should come along with it. Among other things, the bill would give Milwaukee more flexibility to raise local sales tax to avoid looming financial trouble, while also providing more funding for school choice vouchers. That aspect was a high priority for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who announced the deal at a press conference on Thursday.
We will have transformational school choice expansions. We will have money for public schools. We will have more money for all of the local government services that we know are priorities. And on top of that, we have a large number of conservative wins with things that we have struggled to get across the finish line before that are all part of a very comprehensive bill that will really showcase the good things that happen in Wisconsin.
In a statement, Governor Evers called the bill a compromise that will be, quote, transformative for our communities and our state. Milwaukee city and county leaders praised the funding in the bill while expressing dissatisfaction with other parts of the legislation. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the shared revenue deal? What questions do you have about it? Do you think this was a fair compromise? What kind of impact could more state funding have on your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Mark O'Connell is president and CEO of the Wisconsin Counties Association. Mark, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be on the show, Rob.
And Ross Milton is an assistant professor of public affairs at UW-Madison. His research focuses on the political economy and public finance of state and local taxes. Ross, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Ross, can you explain the basics? People don't see the words shared revenue written on local services. How much, though, does it affect our communities?
It's a major piece of funding for local governments all across the state of Wisconsin. And I think states transfer resources to local governments in different ways in different states. But in most states, money that comes from the state in one fashion is a major source of revenues for local governments. And in Wisconsin, the major way that's done is through this shared revenue system.
Mark,
so these changes will have a big impact in many places.
Mark, we've talked about cities and other local governments. How about counties? How do you describe the need that was out there from counties to get more shared revenue from the state?
Well, counties are really an extension of the state in terms of providing services. Our state lawmakers and governor evaluate what needs or desires the citizens have and then pass legislation or programs which meet those needs or desires. They then ask state agencies to perform the function. When the state agencies need statewide outreach, many times they will ask the counties to perform the function. Sometimes money goes with it, sometimes sufficient money, and sometimes insufficient money. When it's insufficient, property taxes make up the difference. So this particular piece of legislation, transferring dollars from the state to the counties and cities, towns, and villages as well, is a major piece of legislation which will definitely have an impact on the citizens of Wisconsin and their property tax bills.
As you look at it from that county perspective, Mark, what we're seeing in this deal, how would county governments around the state be affected?
Yeah, this is one of the most transformative elements of this particular piece of legislation is the linkage of state revenues to local units of government being tied to the state's economy. In other words, currently, local units of government primarily rely on the property tax for funding. That has some loose relationship with the economy, but not direct. What this legislation is doing is taking 1 cent of the sales tax and allocating it to local units of government. And as sales tax collections go up, 2, 3, 4, or in some cases even higher, percent, so too will the allocation to local governments. That single piece of this legislation links our revenues at the local level to the state's economy. What that really does is make it creates all of us at the local government level wanting what the state wants, more people making more money, engaged in more commerce, paying more in taxes at current or even lower rates, so we can take those dollars as locals, invest them in our communities to make them attractive to the smart young wealth makers of tomorrow.
And Ross, this deal, and I think you've said this elsewhere, was a long awaited. I think a lot of people felt like something needed to change. It was overdue. Can you talk about the need for lawmakers and the governor to tackle this?
Sure. The shared revenue program has been cut and or neglected repeatedly over the last 20 years. And so if in terms of how much resources local governments are getting today relative to what they were getting 20 years ago, if you adjust for inflation, it's a dramatic decrease. And for many local governments, even with this large sounding increase that is being proposed today, will actually not bring them back in real inflation adjusted terms to where they were in 2003.
Talking to Ross Milton, Professor at UW-Madison, and Mark O'Connell with the Wisconsin Counties Association, looking in this agreement between Governor Evers and Republican leaders in the legislature over an update to the shared revenue plan. Still has to be passed by the legislature. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Mark is with us in Wauwatosa. Mark, hi.
Hi. Yes, a Hoosier by birth from Indiana, but a Badger living in Wisconsin the last quarter century. Property in both states, residential house. It's going to be so much more expensive here. There was an article in today's Journal Sentinel that said that Milwaukee, if the property tax goes higher, as the politicians just agreed at the state level, that without a referendum, that we'll be on par with other major cities. What the Journal Sentinel article did not state today was it did not compare the property tax. I know that in Indiana, property tax is 1% of assessed value for residential. So, It's 2% for vacation homes. It's 3% for commercial property. And we pay, anywhere from 2 to 4 times higher property tax here in Wisconsin.
Gotcha, Mark. Thanks for the call. Ross, Mark mentioning the sales tax increase approved for Milwaukee without a referendum requiring a 2/3 vote, I believe, from the county board and the city government. How do we compare in Wisconsin in our reliance on property taxes, as Mark was saying, versus other forms of revenue?
Wisconsin's very unusual in that our local governments receive very, very little revenue from sales taxes, and instead are almost the only tax instrument that local governments really have any local control over is the property tax. I mean, and that's unusual. In most states, local governments have the ability to raise revenue via both sales taxes and property taxes. It all varies across states how that exactly works. But we're unusual in that respect. And so this proposal does change that somewhat, all but only for Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, and it would allow them to use a sales tax as well.
Thanks for that call, Mark. And Mark O'Connell with the Counties Association, do you feel like this deal gives counties not named Milwaukee County enough flexibility, enough local control over their fiscal fates?
Well, maybe not so much control, but it does link our revenues to the economy. So we all have a vested interest in a very successful, vibrant economy. In Wisconsin, we're very high in property taxes compared to the rest of the nation. We're relatively low on sales taxes, and we're somewhere in the middle on income taxes. What this is doing in a small way, at least in the city and county of Milwaukee, it is changing that mix a little. I think we're going to see later in this budget, we'll see some adjustments in tax policy, probably in the income tax area, but that will have the effect of changing our mix somewhat at the state level.
Thanks for that call. Mary Kay joins us next in Kenosha. Mary Kay, hello.
Hi. I was hoping that the cities and counties would finally hire program monitors for our WEDA, because WEDA does absolutely nothing for subsidized housing, and taxpayers are paying for things that they wouldn't believe are not getting done. And I'm talking for nonprofits here. So it's about time they took some of the money and started fixing up the properties and start, having those people become accountable, because they're just wasting our tax dollars.
Mary Kay, thanks for the call. Housing and economic development funding. Mark, what kind of oversight is there at the county level anyway when state funding via WEDA and other programs gets spent at the county level?
Well, the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority, WEDA, is an entity that has very little state funding injected into it. WEDA is more or less kind of a self-sufficient operation where they work with developers and housing authorities to create housing, which has very little interface or rub up against local units of government. We certainly have facilities within our boundaries that are WEDA funded, but we don't really have oversight of that. And quite frankly, the issues that are the bond issuances that WEDA might engage in to create a housing development is sort of a one-time thing. There's certainly follow-up, but the actual operation of a housing unit or complex, that is wouldn't necessarily fall under the authority of WEDA, but it might be more of a private sector developer issue.
Thanks for calling in, Mary Kay. We're talking to Wisconsin Counties Association President Mark O'Connell and UW-Madison Public Affairs Professor Ross Milton about the shared revenue deal here in Wisconsin reached between Governor Evers and Republican leaders in the state legislature, still advancing through the legislature now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What would it mean for your community to get some more money back from the state? How do you feel about some of the restrictions, the strings attached? We'll get into that a little on how that money can be spent. Do you like this compromise? Do you have questions about it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation about Wisconsin's shared revenue system, an agreement between legislative Republicans and Governor Tony Evers. Our guests are Wisconsin Counties Association President Mark O'Connell and UW-Madison Public Affairs Professor Ross Milton. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the shared revenue deal, what it could mean for your community? How do you want to see increased state aid used by your local government? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ross, there are some strings attached. What are some of the rules for how this increased funding could be spent by local governments that receive it? What stands out to you?
Well, I think that this is a big change in the way the shared revenue system is thought of. You know, historically, the shared revenue system has been unrestricted aid to local governments that had no strings attached in terms of how they were intended to use it. Whereas the proposal that we have now for the increases in aid are intended to be used primarily for public safety related expenses. And that is, I think, a fundamental change that you can argue for, you can argue against it, but it is a big change.
Mark, what do you think of that change in particular?
Yeah, the restrictions, or I guess directed use of the revenue for public safety and transportation, it's a pretty wide range of items on which we can spend funds. 911, dispatch, courts, public transportation infrastructure. That is quite a bit of what local government does. So it is a change from being unrestricted, but it is still providing a fair amount of flexibility. I think one thing that we should not lose sight of, Rob, this while the legislature and the governor aren't necessarily dinner party partners, they've agreed on this issue. So Speaker Voss, Senator LeMahieu, Senator Felskowski, Representative Kurtz, and Tony Evers all came together from different parts of the political spectrum to say, we need to provide dollars to local government so they can improve their communities, make them attractive to the talent, which is our number one resource for private sector profit in our new millennium knowledge technology-based economy. They've seen the future. And this, quite frankly, this legislation is very visionary. And I think we will look back 10, 15, 20 years from now and say, back in 2022, we saw what needed to get done and did it. And it's going to put our state in a much better place.
To add to what Mark was saying, sure, about the flexibility that it does provide, you know, for many local governments, those restrictions may not end up being all that meaningful because they already spend a lot of money on those topics. And so they have that now, they have these earmarked funds for those expenditures, and that frees up other money to be spent in other ways. So for some local governments, it may not make much difference.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Eagle River. Jeff, hi.
Hi. I was I'm kind of somewhat amused by the conversations that are going on here. The original purpose of the shared revenue formula, was to be able to return the largest that the state of Wisconsin received vis-a-vis the income taxes that it generated from the people that live within the municipalities and the counties in the state of Wisconsin. And that formula was established to be fair and equally distributed among those taxpayers for the purpose of property tax relief. Now, what's going on right now is kind of like I just sort of call it visionary. It's not visionary. If they were to go back to the old formula back in the 1980s and the early 1990s, prior to the changes that were made by the Republican-controlled legislature, they would see that there more money would be returned into the municipalities for the purpose of alleviating the property tax. You know, they use that money for other things now. They got the shared revenue program instead of returning it to municipalities, and they use it for spending in other areas. The purpose of the program was to relieve the property tax, to help offset that burden of that the caller from was talking about Indiana, you know, as an example. It seems to me that, you know, they need to establish a formula that is, has a growth factor, associated with the increase in state revenues.
Jeff, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Ross, does Jeff have the history about right and how that formula didn't end up working ultimately the way we wanted it to originally.
It's certainly the case that the shared revenue system had the effect of alleviating property taxes, but the intent originally was to compensate local governments for lost tax revenue due to state legislation that decreased the ability of local governments to tax certain types of property and to tax income when the state created the income tax system. And so that's approximately right. And over time, in the last couple of decades, the shared revenue formula hasn't been updated and cuts have been made. And so it hasn't been transferring as much money to local governments. And so if local governments wanted more revenue, they went to the property tax, the only tool that they had. And so that's definitely true.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Ross Milton from UW-Madison and Mark O'Connell with the Wisconsin Counties Association, looking at this shared revenue plan agreed to by a Democratic governor, Republican leaders in the legislature, now making its way through that legislature. Mark, I wanted to ask, with the Counties Association, counties come in a lot of shapes and especially sizes here in Wisconsin. Can you talk about some of the different challenges facing counties with different resources to work with in the first place?
Oh, yeah. And it refers to, I mean, I go back to something Jeff indicated, the previous caller. The shared revenue formula, as Ross indicated, hasn't really been run for almost two decades. And so it's very hard to put some dollars into a formula and then rerun it without having several, people that are going to get less, losers, you might call them. The time to revamp the formula is when you can make sure there are no losers to get it done politically. That's part of what was being done with this piece of legislation. We've had counties that, if you would run the formula, would be getting much more. Maybe the best example of that is Waukesha. They're a large county, but they get a very small dollar amount in terms of shared revenue. If we were going to rerun the formula, they would do much, much better. At the same time, you may have some smaller counties that are getting a substantial portion of shared revenue, but if you reran the formula, might not get as much. So when we infuse a fair amount of dollars, like this legislation does, you can ensure that everyone gets something. Is it enough? Is it fair? Not really. When it comes to a formula, because we're not really running a formula again. We're sort of adding dollars and evening things out among cities, towns, villages, counties, and then saying that's your new base. Now you're going to get increases, as Jeff indicated, as the economy does better, sales tax collections go up, then you in your city, town, village, county will also get that same percentage increase in your new base. So it's not perfect, but very few things in politics are. But it's as perfect as it could get in a very complex piece of legislation.
Ross, I wanted to ask about the sustainability of this system. We've got a budget surplus now, so we had some money to work with. Mark mentioned as the economy gets better, things look better. Economies get worse sometimes. Are we going to be in a situation in 2 or 5 or 10 years potentially where this formula runs up against the shoals and we have a big problem with it again?
Well, so I think part of the reason that it has been decreasing over the last 20 years is that the previous system didn't really have any mechanism through which it automatically increased over time. And it was up to the legislature to pass a new law saying that, well, we're going to increase total funding for shared revenues by 5% next year. And that by and large didn't happen. And so, as Mark has pointed out, I think the very nice feature of this is that there is some aspect in which it will automatically increase over time, keyed to how state sales tax revenue goes up. And so if sales tax revenue goes up, that will, benefit local governments. If sales tax revenue doesn't increase over time from one year to another, then there wouldn't be in share revenue.
We'll leave it there. Ross, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Mark, thanks for being with us.
Rob, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Been talking to Mark O'Connell, president and CEO of the Wisconsin Counties Association, and Ross Milton, assistant professor of public affairs at UW-Madison, who researches public finance and state and local taxes. They join us for a look at the shared revenue deal announced by Governor Evers and leading Republicans in the state legislature. Still now has to work its way through the legislature to be passed in its final form. Love to hear from you. Is there a part of this deal you want to hear more about? either from us on Central Time or from the WPR news team. Are you wondering how maybe something in your own community is affected? You can email your question, your point of curiosity over to ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org, and we can give it a look in the future. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, get an update on a pipeline project here in Wisconsin and the legal battles that have been surrounding it ongoing. The latest on Line 5. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Thanks to Lee Rayburn for hosting the show last week. On Friday, Lee shared a job opportunity for a pizza taster. I have some more pizza news for you about an ingredient on the rise. According to the website Slice of the Union, which surveys local independent pizzerias, one of the rising stars in the pizza topping world is dill pickles. Now, apparently, this pickle pizza idea started to be a thing 5 years ago, but more as a viral novelty. It's been catching on since then. I haven't encountered it or tried it myself, but I got to say, of course, it makes sense to me. Now, pickles are really salty. Pizza's pretty salty to begin with, so I wouldn't pair it with other salty stuff like pepperoni or bacon or sausage. But green peppers and pickles? I think that could be a great combo. Pizza's pack a peck of pickles and peppers. This is Central Time.